It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 341 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week we continue our series from this year's San Diego Comic-Con, and it's an all DC episode. So thanks to BH Impact and DC Publicity. Everything starts off with Tom Taylor talking about Injustice 2, then Dan Jurgens talks about his upcoming Green Lanterns comics. Then we talk to Nick Darrington, who does covers for Mr. Miracle and has some Batman projects coming that he talks about. After that is Brian Andreyko, who is taking on Supergirl. Then we have Magdalene DiSaggio, who talks about Eternity Girl. Next up is Liam Sharp, who will be providing the art for Green Lantern, where he'll be paired with Grant Morrison. And everything wraps up with Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti talking about a unique Harley Quinn project and some interesting stuff about Batman that Jimmy's involved with as well. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. All right. Good. How are you doing, Tom? We're talking with Tom Taylor, creator of Injustice and many other good things. The Deep, which I really enjoy. And so Injustice 2 now is going on. Talk about what it was like to come back to that book and to that universe.
It was great to be invited back. Injustice was something I never wanted to leave. Like, it is the most fun I've ever had, probably professionally in anything. You mentioned The Deep. The only reason I left Injustice was because I was trying to write a 26-episode animated series at the exact same time as writing a weekly comic, and there was this point where I'd been awake for 3 days straight, and my wife walked in to see me still sitting there on a morning for the third time, and I turned around, she said I look like a zombie, and she said something has to go, and sadly, you know, it couldn't be my own show, so it had to be the thing I enjoyed the most. So to be able to come back and start telling these stories again with the characters I love, it's been fantastic.
I have to tell you a quick story. I have a friend of mine who was looking for book recommendations, and I said to him, what you need to do is you need to read Injustice, like the first couple of issues, with the Joker and Superman in relation to that. He was floored when he read it. He said, "I that was one of the best books I ever read, and now he buys it all the time." So I just want to tell you, we're out there pushing the book and letting people read it, so it's great.
I really appreciate it, and I can't tell you how many people have told me that Injustice is the first comic they've read, or it was their entry point to comics, because, you know, that makes me incredibly happy, because I want everybody in the world reading the greatest storytelling medium in the world. So if Injustice is the entry point, then great.
One of the things I loved about the book is your take on Superman, because I think you and I may have talked before about the fact that Superman's difficult to write because he's so moral and upright. You have a pretty good idea what he's going to do. But your Superman, I have no idea what he's going to do when he's there. I don't think he's currently in the book right now. What's his status right now?
He's currently sitting in jail. He's in a prison covered in red lamps. But he is actually going to be appearing in the annual very soon. So we're doing an annual which sort of goes back in time and examines Batman and Superman a little bit, shows a little bit of their friendship in the past, and as opposed to what it is now.
Wow, that's great. So is that your project, what you're doing with DC right now? You're sticking with Injustice 2?
Yeah, doing Injustice 2, and I'm doing something else for them, which I can't talk about just yet, but it's every bit as epic, if not more epic, than Injustice. It is ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, man, now I got to know what that is. Because you did a Green Lanterns miniseries.
Yeah, I did Green Lanterns, and I've done Batman Superman, and I wrote on Earth 2 for a fairly long time, and I'm sure I've done other stuff too that I can't think of right now.
So it's going to be more epic than all of that?
Yeah, no, it is. It's more epic than that. It's huge. This is going to be very big.
Can you give us an idea when we might expect to see some news on this? I don't want spoilers, of course. Let's keep away from that. But When will we find out some stuff?
You will expect some news in the next couple of months.
Okay, so something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Injustice 2, I mean, do you have any idea how long you want that comic to go?
Look, it goes as long as it goes. It's hard to tell. I mean, I mentioned to someone just before that originally I was hired for 15 weeks, 15 chapters. And then it wasn't, you know, suddenly people started reading it, and then suddenly everybody was reading it, and I've written now 150 chapters. So it's an honor, I have to say.
Well, I have to ask you about my favorite character is Batman.
Yes.
And your Batman, just like we talked about Superman being different, your Batman is real different too. Talk about who Batman is as compared to like in the regular DC universe.
I think he is Batman. He's still that character, but he's just been through a lot more. You know, and he's lost so much, and he's lost his children, and he's lost his best friend, and he's lost sort of his view on the world in a little way. It's been challenged. You know, that the idea that Superman, who to him is, you know, this guy can walk on water, basically, literally. I think for him, that moral conundrum of, you know, if it had have just been that one death, you know, if I had have just allowed that, if I had have been more of a friend, if I had have reached out to him and not condemned him for this thing, maybe none of this would have happened. But because he has this high moral ground and he has this thing that, you know, one death is it. You know, you do not kill. This is Batman. You know, it's really difficult to see them pulled apart. So I think from a character sense, it's still Batman, it's still Bruce, but he's just been through so much more and he's had to occasionally do things that Batman wouldn't do, you know, as you and I understand him. Yeah.
Can you give us any idea of the story arcs that you're going to do in the next couple of months? I don't know. No spoilers. Just
sure.
what we can know.
Well, I can tell you that Killer Croc and Orca are going to get married. So that's the best thing in the world. So, I mean, that is the headline. If you're looking for something, that is the headline. I know. It's ridiculous. Okay. Yep. The Suicide Squad are there as well. You know, we've just released the cover to that with Man-Bat crying in the background, wiping away a tear. So we're having a lot of fun, but at the moment we're actually in space with red lanterns and green lanterns. Starro has become a red lantern. I know, right? You can't see people listening to this.
I never know what you're going to do. That's a great thing about
that. That's exactly it. And, you know, I have an entire universe to play with, so I'm going to play as hard as I can.
Quick update on The Deep. Where is that at? The second season came out, right?
Yeah, second season's out. We're halfway through writing the third season. The toy line just launched here at San Diego, which is fantastic. We've signed a deal with Bloomsbury. They're making junior novels, guidebooks, sticker books. They're all out in the next couple of months worldwide, and it's going great.
Wow, well, I'm glad you're having success because I love your storytelling. Keep it up. I think it's going to continue to be wonderful stuff.
Okay, thank you.
It's great to talk again with Dan Jurgens, who is now going to Green Lanterns. How are you doing, Dan?
Very good. It's San Diego, and it's fun.
Real briefly, the wrap-up of Superman and your time on with Action. What was that experience like?
It's always fun to do Superman. And being able to do it twice a month with Action Comics, starting with 957, and run all the way up to number 1,000 with it, is something I really enjoyed. It was great to reestablish, you know, the concept, starting with Lois and Clark before that Lois and Clark are married, that it's a very important, I think, one of the more important, if not the most important relationship in comics, and that out of that comes John as this wonderful new Superboy. So I think it was a tremendous opportunity. I really enjoyed doing it, and being able to get it all kind of pulled together for Action 1000 was an incredible and fun experience.
I love the fact that they're married and it's successful. I think that's just a great thing in comics.
Yeah,
we should have more of that. But anyway, Green Lantern now. You're moving on to, let's see, are you doing Green Lanterns?
Yeah.
Okay, who's going to be in Green Lanterns?
Start off primarily with Simon and Jessica, because they have been the main drivers of that series so far. But then after that, very shortly, we'll have John Stewart, we have Kyle, we have Kilog, we have Guy Gardner, and we have Hal coming back in 52. We have the Guardians. We have a lot of other lanterns as well. So this is a story about the Green Lantern Corps.
So, now you've done Green Lantern before, haven't you? You've written it?
I have not ever done Green Lantern directly. What I had done was during the Death of Superman days, I blew up Coast City, that then sent Hal off on, you know, 10 years worth of changes. And then I also did Zero Hour, which brought Parallax into the story, and Kyle Rayner as well.
This is like full circle now. You're back to go do that. So it's going to be fun to see you doing the Green Lanterns and stuff like that. Of course, we know that Grant Morrison and Liam Sharp are off doing Hal Jordan.
Right.
How are you going to deal with this? Is it going to be from the core perspective? Are you going to, like, feature different Green Lanterns each issue? How are you going to do that?
No, the first story, the first arc, really runs 50 to 57. And what that is very much about is the entire Green Lantern core and what happens if something starts to go wrong with a couple of the basic concepts of the core. What happens if all of a sudden all these people who are wearing power rings can no longer trust those rings? You know, what happens if, as part of the power ring, we see the downside of a core, which is to make it work, you have to have a lot of trust and faith in the Green Lantern next to you. What happens if you can't trust that individual? What happens if there's miscommunication? What happens if there are lies and deceit within the core? And then does that human spirit or the spirit of the core rise above all that? These are the themes we'll be playing with.
It'll be fun. Are you going to bring any unusual Green Lanterns that we haven't seen for a while?
You know, we have an important role for Penelopes and his planet of Pinello, so there is that. We also have Mogo as kind of a central character, but as much as anything, it's going to boil down to those we really know and doing some fun stuff with Guy, because I think he is just such an electric character. So that is the core group that we'll be focusing on.
Is it going to be on Earth or is it going to be in space?
Most of it is in space. There's some on Earth, but most in space.
Are you planning to go places we haven't seen before? Are you going to take new takes on how the parts of the universe we've seen?
Not so much in this arc. As much as anything, this is going to be a story that takes place on Mogo, which is where the Guardians are located now, and on Earth, and we'll kind of bounce back and forth. We have some other locations in between, and we obviously opened up on Pinello, but as far as the way it really works, it's going to be back and forth between Earth and Mogo.
Now, you're not drawing this, right? You're writing.
No, I'm so fortunate to have Mike Perkins drawing it. Mike and I have wanted to work together for a number of years. And so he's doing the bulk of it, and we also have Marco Santucci working on it as well, which is really nice because they make a very solid team.
I miss you doing the artwork, though. I always love your artwork.
I do, too. I want to get back to it. It's just I'm so busy writing, I just haven't had enough time to do it.
Well, someday you'll have to take a Green Lantern book, and if something falls apart and you need to pick it up, it'll be
like you. I really would, but when comics come out twice a month, that's a tall order. Yeah.
I mean, what's that like for you? Because you used to be in the days that you and I were reading books way back when you had the Death of Superman, it was a monthly thing. Yeah. Is it harder to do the twice a month thing?
It's harder only in the concept of it's harder to keep it on schedule. But the reality is, I like it because I find it a very effective way to tell the story. It's fun to be able to have a book coming out that often so you can tell the story and keep readers interested. I think it's a really great way to work.
So do you have any other projects coming up, or is Green Lanterns going to keep you busy?
Green Lanterns are keeping me busy. I'm also writing Batman Beyond and writing a Teen Titans series that is now part of our effort to put Walmart's books into Walmart to find new readers. So,
what do you think about that, putting comics in Walmart like that?
I think it's an awesome idea, because what we're trying to do is develop new readers and then bring them as bigger fans into comic book stores. And I think that's really important. So it's anything we can do to get newer generations of readers loving our product and reading comics is a great thing.
I mean, I'm so for that, but unfortunately, the Walmart where I went and I got the first four, they had the box way up high, and I could barely... Luckily, I knew what the box looked like, and I found it.
Yep, yep.
I wish they would have put it lower so people could actually look in there and see that thing.
Say something to the manager. That's the best thing to do. Help us out.
I really like that. I think it's a great thing, so... Okay. So let's see, as far as after this story gets done, do you have another story in mind, I'm sure, by now, for Green Lantern?
Right now, it's all I can do to keep it, keep this one on track. There are so many characters. This is a big story, and I think it's a very expansive one, and as I said, this will run us up through 57.
Well, I, like I said, I'd love to see you draw once in a while again. It would be fun to see. But as far as the writing goes, I love your writing too. So the writing's very fast-paced, very character-oriented. So I like that as much. So I hope Green Lanterns is a big success when you're doing it. I think it'd be great, Dan.
Okay. Me too, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
It's great to talk with Mark Andreyko, who's taking over Supergirl. How are you doing today?
Good. It's the first day of the con for me, so I'm still happy. Get back to me on Sunday when I have no voice.
We won't do that then, if that's the case. Talk about Supergirl for me, because Supergirl is one of those challenging characters. What do you do with somebody? She's not Superman. You know, she's got her own differences. How do you approach Supergirl?
For me, based on what Brian did with Krypton's destruction, was sort of my inroad. Because Superman doesn't remember Krypton. He was an infant. He was born, the planet blew up, he landed on Earth. So Krypton is theoretical for him. It's not for Kara. She was a teenager. Everyone and everything she knew was destroyed. And subsequently, it's a trauma that she hasn't really ever dealt with. She doesn't really know who she is an important one for me. It's the idea of her having some survivor guilt, and if you're a child of divorce and you got a stepmom, is loving your stepmom betraying your mom? Is her loving Earth betraying Krypton? What are her responsibilities? And a lot of this is all self-inflicted. It's all about the biggest problem we have as people every day is getting out of our own way. And it's about that. It's about her, now that she knows that Krypton was destroyed on purpose, that gives her a physical mission so she can go on the emotional journey.
Puzzled with her, though, is she never really gets her own rogues gallery. Superman's got Brainiac and Luthor, and then when Supergirl ends up fighting his foes.
She's leaving Earth to go investigate. Did Rogelzar tell the truth? If he did tell the truth, who else was involved? Because you don't destroy a planet by yourself. Who knew? What's the cover-up? Is the cover-up, it's like Nixon and Watergate. The cover-up can be sometimes worse, because good people doing bad things. How deep does the conspiracy go? Did Rogelzar do other stuff in the galaxy? Was this a one-off? What else was going on? So it's her going after this sort of vast conspiracy to find the real answers, as the metaphor is her processing and finding out who she is as a person.
Are you working with Brian at this? Because you're taking from his story.
It's complimenting it, and and we talk and make sure things, you don't need to read both books. If you do, they'll complement each other, or all three books actually, because he's doing Action and Superman. But it's definitely Kara's story, because she even says to Cal in the first issue, I have to do this and I have to do it myself. This is something she needs to do,
I was going to ask, is she going to do this by herself, or is she going to need some help to go out and spit? Crypto is going to be there. Okay, that's interesting. So, okay, maybe I have to buy the book to find out. Because I don't understand how Crypto is. Well, we'll see how the eating element. Because, there have been some stories where Supergirl and other characters have had, she's had a pet cat and other things. And, of course, that's very human of her to want some kind of companionship to go with it. Okay, now that leads to another question. How do you handle Crypto? Look, he's not going to be like Bandit in Johnny Quest, is he? Is he going to be more? Is he more intelligent because he's a Kryptonian dog?
You'll see.
Okay, when's this all going to start? Let's go.
August 8th. The one thing that I need to do. Yeah, we just locked the final proof. for the first issue, and it's gorgeous. Getting to work with Kevin Maguire is insanely cool. It's a beautiful book. I think people will really like it.
The whole book. Oh, I haven't seen that in a long time. That'll be wonderful. He's going to do the cover?
Oh, no. Terry Dodson's doing the covers, and Amanda Connor is doing the variant cover.
Wow. I have to talk about female characters, because, and I've mentioned this to some other folks, I have some friends who think that a female lead needs to be very maternal in nature. A real woman talks out problems. A real woman is very maternal. But it doesn't sound like Supergirl's going to go that route.
That's really reductive. I think that's why we have characters that are either, you know, the Madonna or whore syndrome. They're either saints or they're villains. We're all more complicated than that. And I think that I don't write any character as this character. I don't write gay characters. I write characters who happen to be gay, or characters who happen to be women, or characters who happen to be black, or characters who happen to be straight. Because when you put that adjective first, that's what you're writing. You're writing an adjective. And you run the risk of lecturing people and writing didactic characters that are ideas or symbols, and that's not interesting. It's her gender is a huge part of who she is, but it's also a facet of who she is. There's so many other things. So it's you know, and she's also young. So there are definitely things that make women different than men in reactions and things, but this isn't going to be her, you know, being a nurturing. This isn't going to be the cliche of that, because one, her age that doesn't really lean into, and that's just I find that really reductive. That's a facet of who she is, but
female, and she's a woman, you know, a strong woman. I like that. Folks kind of say, well, it doesn't matter to me that she's a woman, but on some levels, I think it's important that she is.
The same breath, it's also utterly insignificant of who she is. I mean, as a gay man, being gay is a huge part of who I am, but it's also not a big deal. You know, it's just we are all constantly evolving, constantly changing, and, you know, we're a kaleidoscope, and those different pieces fall into different places depending on who you're with or what the situation is or what part of your life you are at. So
how long will she be in space? Do you have an idea?
Yes, I do, but I'm not telling you.
Buy the book.
Lots of moving parts as well. So they always say, if you God laughs when you make plans. So we have a plan, but
so are we going to see space characters?
Yes.
Oh, we are. Okay. Buy the book. Okay, buy the book. Okay, I get the answer.
That's good.
Because, I mean, you know, we've seen Green Lantern team up with Space Ghost and stuff like that. I don't know how much you're going to...
There won't be any of the Hanna-Barbera characters in this. Those are all sort of out-of-continuity one-shots, but there are more than enough space characters in the DC universe.
Green Lantern?
You'll have to see.
Okay, I got you. So what can you tell us about what you're going to do as a
star?
I thought, okay.
She's going in outer space for a year to find out who destroyed Krypton.
All right, so when she comes back, where is she going to go when she comes back? What's going to happen? Is that another thing
That's far away.
It's too far away. All right.
She will eventually come back.
Well, let's talk about something about Supergirl that always has nagged me, is her costume. And I don't want to, I don't mean this in a sexist way, but she's forever changing her costume. Is she going to keep the costume that she's been having?
She's going to have a bunch of costumes, because they serve a function while she's in outer space. It's functional fashion. Not every planet, not every star system is a yellow sun. There are different environments, there are different creatures, there are different living entities. So there's function in it.
See, Superman used to have that supermobile that when he went into space, he would fly. I didn't ask that as a question, because I knew the answer was going to be that. So, as far as Supergirl goes, I hope it goes real well and lasts a long time, because I'd love to see the Girl of Steel do well. I think she's great.
I mean, I'm having a blast writing her and getting to the people I'm getting to work with. My editor, Jessica Chen, is great. The art, you know, getting to work with artists like Kevin Maguire is a dream. I'm proud of this first issue. I think people, if they give it a shot, they'll really like it.
Kevin Maguire, oh man, his Justice League International stuff, I still quote some of the jokes.
He draws the best expressions of anyone in comics.
One minute. Okay, so you've got other projects you're working on besides Supergirl as well?
Yep, but none of them can be announced yet. So.
All right. Buy the book. Okay, that's what we're going to do. Well, if we want to follow you and keep up with the stuff you're working on, what's the best way to do it?
And Twitter.
Okay. Well, I wish much success. I hope Supergirl flies really well, and hope we get to see more of your stuff in the future, so keep it up.
Thank you very much.
to talking with Nick Darrington. Did I get that right?
It's Darrington.
Okay, Darrington. All right. Doing cover artist stints for DC and good things like
that. Yeah, up for an Eisner this year.
Talk about which one you, Doom Patrol, right?
I broke back into comics with Doom Patrol, and that was about 2 years ago. We started on that project, and that got a lot of attention, and we've been like chugging on that for a while, and then the editor on that was Jamie Rich, and when he took over. On the Mr. Miracle project, and then I started doing covers for that, and so I was doing covers for Doom Patrol, which are really weird covers. They're like real designy, lots of bizarre influences, from music visuals and weird publishing stuff to posters. Well, I try to bring all this like other stuff to switch into Mr. Miracle, where it's like traditional Jack Kirby superhero 70s character, and it's like, you know, I wanted to embrace that and do Jack right.
What was that transition? Was that difficult, or is it fun to do something different?
Well, no, like when we were working on Doom Patrol, like I was doing the interiors as well on that. Like we never wanted it to be this like pure art comic. We still wanted a proper superhero happening. And so, like, getting a chance to do Mr. Miracle, big swords and helmets and classic Jack Kirby visual iconography, it was cool. Well, it's less work in a lot of ways, because, like, with Doom Patrol, you're starting from base one every issue. You're like, all right, let's reinvent this world every day. And when you have Jack Kirby, his legacy, you're like, let's homage it properly, let's be respectful.
Kirby people who would not be happy if you didn't get it.
Yeah, well, it was that Mitch and Tom's vision for the book was to like bring it back to the original designs. Mr. Miracle and all the Fourth World characters.
How much input do you get on the covers? Do you get some direction, or do you get to take off with it on your own? How do you do that?
Well, I'm always super respectful and thoughtful. So like, especially with like the Mr. Miracle work, because I know this is Mitch and Tom's project. I'm just here along for the ride, and so. And a lot of times, I'm working way ahead, so like I'm they'll give me I'll get like two sentences like in this issue, Kalibak and Scott work out a peace agreement. That's all we know, you know, and so I'm like, all right, I can work with that, and so I'll work up some stuff and see I'll obsessively like look at the covers that came before it, and I'll actually pull them all up on the screen. Like I want them all to look good together. Like no one will ever look at it like that, you know. But I care for some reason.
But you know that. That's
I know that. And that's how you obsess, and that's how you get good.
Well, that's different stuff too. You don't want to do if the covers start looking the same.
Right,
people
right.
won't know it when they go to the stand.
But well, that was the kind of the cool thing with this project too, is that Mitch decided later on to like, all right, I'm gonna do covers too. So then I was like, well, you know what would be interesting? The story is all about kind of a duality of reality. There's like this big fourth world where Scott is a general, a god, and then he's also this pathetic guy on his couch who like recently tried to kill himself, you know. And he's like, and there's a bit of an unreliable narrator happening, you know. Like, is this fantasy world real? Is he boom tubing, or is this an escape from this terrible existence that he lives on? Yeah, so it's like, and Tom plays with all these ideas. And so I'm like, well, hey, I was like, so like, Mitch, all right, how about this? I'm gonna do the straight covers. Mine are gonna look mostly like a normal superhero visual, you know. It'll be a big villain and a cool sword and a helmet and people looking awesome and powerful. And then you can do like weirdo artsy design, like neat stuff. And so the covers themselves kind of like represent that duality a little bit. At least that's one of the ideas I had in my head as we like charged forward. That's another thing. Like I was working on most of those Mr. Miracle covers while doing all the Doom Patrol work, and so like everything was due yesterday. You know, everything. So like, So I'm like, all right, what's the clever idea tonight? Go sketch, come up with something fun and punchy and what's the good twist? You know, and yeah, you just go.
So are you done with all these? I'm not asking for spoilers, but
yeah.
Are you done with all your covers?
Mr. Miracle is all wrapped up as far as my work on it is. Okay. Yeah, like Mitch has a pile of drawing to do still. Mitch is drawing, inking, coloring it all himself, and doing effects, and I think he's got a letterer doing it. That's at least something he can pass down. But no, he's a crazy person, taking on, and he had a baby this year, so he's a champion.
You've got some other project coming with Batman, I understand.
I'm really pumped about that. Walmart Batman. Batman with the most corporate, the biggest character combining with the most corporate retail store, Walmart, to make the most corporate perfect thing, and it's going to be great. I grew up reading comics off of 7-Eleven magazine shelves, you know? And, like, we live in an age where if you want to buy a paper comic, you have to go to some possible weird comic store that your parent has to drive you to. It's hard to get them. And they're written to be part of this, like, elaborate... They're written for adults, and they're written to be part of this elaborate, giant lore, and they're hard to get into. So, like, these Walmart giant-sized books are, like, put together to, like, be accessible and to get a whole new generation of readers started. And I can't wait to see how it works.
The local Walmart where I got the first four, all came out at the same time. They were up high. I had to look and see. I knew what the box looked like.
Okay.
So I saw the box, and I said, oh, my gosh, there's books up there.
It's like
a
blue box?
With all the different colors and designs on them. So I reached up, and I got the four out, and I put it back. Of course, I was lucky they had one of each of the four.
Okay.
So I was getting good. So.
Well, it's good to hear that they're like people are going out and hunting it down and having fun with it.
So are you doing like a classic Batman? Are you making it more? Are you following anybody else's sort of a design?
I'm not sure how much I can talk about, but yeah, like I as far as I know, it's going to be in continuity storytelling, but it's going to be a grand mystery that takes place where it's like it's Batman. 12 chapters, 12 pages each chapter. Batman's solving a big mystery. It's Detective Batman. And he's going to go across the DCU searching for clues, putting the pieces together.
Brian Michael Bendis,
Batman Universe.
Yeah, how come you hit all the hype spots all the time? Somebody must like you.
I'm faking it. And everyone's falling for it, apparently.
It starts in issue 3, right? The third issue?
Yes. As far as I understand.
So we'll be going, man, I can't wait to see it. It's going to be great fun. I can't wait to see what your interpretation
is. That's the thing. It's like I have an odd drawing style. And so, like, I was like, I mean, the first thing was like, when they asked me, I was like, are you sure? You know, because I did this weirdo punk rock comic, then I did this weird artsy Mr. Miracle stuff, and then like, oh, here's the most corporate-y mainstream thing you could possibly ever do, and like, are you sure? Because I'm gonna make it cool, I'm gonna make it weird. But then it's like you go back and you look at the history of the great Batman comics, and you go back and you look at like Batman Year One. It's a weird drawing style.
It's gonna be great. I can't wait to see it. And much success, Nick, with it. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
We're still here at the convention, and I'm now talking with...
I'm Magdalene Visaggio.
And you do Eternity Girl?
Yeah, writer and creator.
Talk about what the concept is of that book.
So Eternity Girl is like a really weird, like early 90s Vertigo style comic about a former superhero who's immortal and suicidal, so she decides to destroy the universe.
Immortal and Suicidal, that's an interesting way to go about that. How did you come up with the concept?
Well, it started off as really more of like an Element Girl book based on, as like a sequel to Neil Gaiman's famous issue Facade. So I was just riffing off that original concept.
This is part of Vertigo.
It's part of Young Animal, but it's very 90s Vertigo-y.
Gotcha, okay. All right, has it come out yet?
Yeah, it's been out since March, and issue 5 just dropped last week.
Wow, okay. I guess I'm a little behind on that one. Issue 5, do you have a certain number of issues planned?
Yeah, it's a 6-issue mini.
Oh, so you're almost done with it. What's it like to get to the end of the miniseries? I mean, you've been working on this for a while, so it must be quite an accomplishment.
It's always a little stressful wondering how you're going to land the plane, if anyone's going to buy the ending you came up with, especially when it's been a book as complicated and sort of multi-layered as Eternity Girl is. It sort of has to land just right.
Okay. So, okay, is this your first DC work?
It's my first, like, full series at DC, yeah.
Okay, so have you got other things planned that's got to come up soon?
At DC or anywhere?
How about anywhere?
Oh, I have so much stuff that I don't know what I can legally talk about right now. But, yeah, I can't think of it. I guess I've got Vagrant Queen at Vault right now. What else do I even have out right now? Kim and Kim, the new volume of that dropped this week. And I think that's what I've got running at the moment other than Eternity Girl, but there's going to be a lot more coming in the year ahead.
Any chance of another Eternity Girl miniseries?
Fingers crossed.
So it's going to depend on sales, basically, reaction? Okay. Okay. So can you talk a little bit about the character herself, the Eternity Girl?
Say again?
Talk about the character herself. I mean, you know, who she is and what she's like.
So the main character of Eternity Girl is this lady named Carolyn Sharp, who has been this chronic overachiever her whole life. You know, like the sort of person who, like, you know, graduated college early, has like a million degrees, joined the CIA. Got recruited to this like top secret sort of, you know, SHIELD type agency, and ends up getting these crazy like superpowers as a result. That then how she becomes immortal is these superpowers. And after an incident that forces her to lose control of her power, she gets sort of put on administrative leave, and she kind of feels like she doesn't have anything going on in her life, and that she's sort of being tossed aside, and she gets into this really bad depression, which is why she's suicidal. While she's like sort of stuck in that, she is visited by the, what I could really only call the ghost of her arch nemesis, who basically says, "I know how you can die, help me destroy the universe." And so the book itself gets into this like really like existential and nihilistic stuff, as sort of like examine like what it means to mean something, what it means to like have a meaning of life, and how we find that for ourselves. As everyone's sort of trying to help Carolyn like not do this horrifying thing that she's gonna do.
Is this sort of like a parable or a personal thing? Is a story that maybe kind of reflects something that you've gone through? Or?
Oh yeah, I have a lifelong major depressive disorder, and sort of I'm definitely drawing directly from that.
That must be something to see it out there on the printed page now.
It's been interesting. A lot of people seem to be really clicking with it, so hopefully that continues.
I'd like to see more of that. I'm going to catch up on it, and I'd like to see more of it. Well, I wish you much success with it and with your other projects. I hope it goes well. I love strong female leads, by the way, so I'm really looking forward to that. So, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, it's time to talk with Liam Sharp, one of the great artists at DC Comics. How are you doing today, Liam?
I'm all right. I drank one too many celebrating last night, so as is our wont at San Diego.
That happens at San Diego.
Oh, absolutely.
Talk about the books that you've worked on DC, and I understand there's a big announcement that's been made, too. Yeah. We'll get to that in a minute, but let's talk about what you've done in the past.
Well, I've actually been working with DC for quite a long time. I mean, way back in the day with Wildstorm, I did a book with Jeff Johns, which was called The Possessed. It was kind of like a dark Ghostbusters thing with a team of exorcists. I think that was his only creator-owned series, actually. And then 2008, I was on Gears of War, which was like a crazy big seller, that thing. You know, for a licensed thing, it's something like 400,000. It was their biggest selling book of the year, although that kind of went under the radar. So, you know, my history with DC goes back a fair way. And then, obviously, more recently, there's been the Wonder Woman run, which was just crazy good timing. And then that was followed up with The Brave and the Bold, which I got to write as well. And I just finished that. So I literally came straight off that onto Green Lantern.
Talk about the transition from artist to writer-artist. How was that? Was that something you wanted to do for a while? Did the opportunity present yourself and you took it on? How did that happen?
Well, I've actually written stuff for a long time. Way back in the early 90s, I wrote a few things for Marvel UK. So I co-wrote the Bloodseed series, and I wrote Death's Head Gold, which was like a 40-page special we did back in the day. So, I mean, writing's always been part of my DNA, really. And I've got a couple of novels out too, so just pure prose. I love writing. I would write as much as I could draw if there's enough hours in the day.
Do you prefer to write as opposed to art, or are they kind of the same?
Very different mediums. They're in a very different sort of headspace, I think. I love both equally, but I am really sort of enjoying just drawing again, I must admit. It's like, I think the older you get, the more you realize how privileged that is. You know, it's harder when you're younger to imagine just sitting at a drawing board every single day. And now I know, you know, it's a complete, like I say, a privilege to be able to do that, especially when you're drawing iconic characters like Diana or, you know, Hal Jordan.
Well, Batman Wonder Woman I really enjoyed, I have to say. It's just a great series. You got to do two of the big characters. I mean, what was that? Did you propose it? Did DC get you to? How did that book happen?
Well, when Greg decided he was just going to have to finish after we did our run together, I wasn't quite ready to come off. You know, I wasn't ready to finish drawing Diana, but at the same time I couldn't imagine working with a different writer, not because I don't like other writers, but because each writer brings their own sensibility to a character, and the Diana that I fell in love with was the Diana that I'd created with Greg, and so her voice was a certain way in my head, and I thought, I think I could sort of replicate that. I'm no Greg, but I think I can capture that essence. So I talked to the editor, and he said, well, why don't you pitch something? You know, we know you write. We've seen your stuff, so pitch something. Is there anything you've got in mind? And I said, actually, there is. I've always wanted to do a story with the Irish legends and Tiernan Og, and really utilizing the old Celtic mythology. It's something I've had a passion for forever. And it seemed like that actually might be good timing, because there hasn't been much of that ilk for a while. And I certainly couldn't think of anything where Batman or Wonder Woman or some of the mainstream characters had gone into that realm. So I pitched it, and it kind of went straight through very quickly, got greenlit, and I was just amazed, really.
Now, of course, you got a big announcement that's going on. You want to tell us a little bit about it? I guess some of it's public now, right?
Yes, it's all public.
So what can you tell us?
I can tell you that I'm doing the Green Lantern with Grant Morrison. It's the most incredibly exciting news. I've known Grant for so long, you know. We're both from the British Isles, and we've both been in the industry a similar amount of time, but we've never worked together. And we started, it's funny, I kept bumping into him recently over the last few years, almost randomly. And then at the Wonder Woman movie premiere, he was there, and we just started yakking, you know, and it's like, we've got to do something together. And we started throwing ideas around. And at some point I said to him, you know, what about, is there one of the main characters you'd love to do? And he's like, no, I'm not going to do any of those, you know, I'm not doing any, I haven't got time, I've got the TV show, there's no way I can do like an ongoing thing unless, you know, it's creator owned. But obviously Dan had a word with him. They went for a meal, and Dan Didio pitched this notion to him, and he just couldn't get it out of his head, and he was telling me about it. He said, I mean, to him, he said, I sat there for half an hour and hardly said a word, and this whole idea of what this universe could be was going round in his head, and he got very excited by that. Dan said it was actually only like 2 or 3 minutes, Grant's mind works very fast, right? And really the premise was like, let's take it back to basics, let's make it a police procedural. What does that look like if you're a space cop? How do we go back to the roots with Hal? It's just like a real sort of consolidation of all of those Hal stories over decades and decades, really. We're referencing stuff right back to the early sort of 50s and 60s. So people who love the Green Lantern and know the old stuff, they'll find lots of like Easter eggs in there.
Now talk about his uniform, and is the Green Lantern Corps going to be involved? How's this going to work?
There's going to be references to all of that, but we're really keeping it about Hal and a space cop. The costume I'm keeping pretty classic. It's almost the Neil Adams one, really. Except the green on the front doesn't go down to his pant line, you know. But that's about the only difference. I've gone for a sort of real classic look. That was my intention. I didn't want to sort of... I guess the Neil Adams period was my Hal, you know, and the way he drew him was how I see him in my head. It's that version filtered through me, if you know what I mean. But there's also a load of pulp elements. I was looking at Virgil Finlay, so a friend of mine's already called it the Sharpie Crackle. You know, it's kind of a bit like the Kirby thing. So I'm kind of making that a little bit of a theme to give it a pulp element. You know, it's definitely got a pulpy aesthetic, so I'm really having a ball.
See, I'm excited about this because so many people say that space stuff doesn't work.
Right.
You know, and here you are, you're going to take him out and make him a space cop, which is something that Green Lantern can do that other people really can't.
Right.
So you're going to get to explore parts of the DC universe that other people haven't seen. Are we going to see new aliens? Are you going to get a chance to create new characters for DC?
Oh, definitely, yeah. We've got this, there's a space vampire who's a big main new villain. There's a couple of new Green Lanterns that we haven't seen before, but there's like I say, there's classic old stuff that we haven't seen, weird stuff from the 60s, but those very peculiar little designs of characters. So we're trying to go back to the earliest versions and slightly riff off them rather than the evolved versions, you know, over many decades. So it should be fun for people, I think.
I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to see it. Do you know when it's going to happen? When it's going to start to come out?
I don't, actually. I think maybe November, somewhere like that. I should know better.
But you're working on it already, right?
I am working on it. Yeah, I'm already... The first issue is like 30 pages. It's a big, weighty jump off. And I'm halfway through issue 2 at the moment. Grant's written... He's already plotting into beyond issue 12. You know, he's already got a ton of stuff in the pipeline. He's like 5 scripts in or something, maybe even more actually. He's just having a. I think once he got it in his head, he just went home and wrote, and that was it. You know?
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be wonderful stuff. I'm glad that you got to announce it, and because you know Green Lantern fans. You know the history of Green Lantern, and there was a time when Hal Jordan was actually like off the board.
Right.
And so now to see him come back and get good treatment like that to a Green Lantern fans like me, I'm really enjoying it. So I can't wait to see what you're going to do.
Thank you very much. No, I'm really excited, and I'm glad it's Hal too, because he was my Green Lantern. I kind of it's a real like I say, consolidation, but a pared down, and it's a procedural, and it should be fun.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Pleasure. All right.
We've met before.
Yes.
Yes, I know.
Several times we've talked. Yes, we have. So, all right, let's start off here. We're talking right now with Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, although I should say Amanda Connor, women first, ladies first. And Jimmy
Palmiotti.
She's always first. Okay. How you doing, Amanda?
I'm doing terrific. How are you doing?
Good. And you, Jimmy?
I'm doing fantastic.
Now, I understand you guys are doing another Harley Quinn one, but it's something unique. How would you describe what's coming up from Harley Quinn?
Well, we're doing it's a Looney Tunes crossover, and we're crossing over with the character that it's easy to describe who he is, because when I say his name, people don't know. He's in that Bugs Bunny cartoon. He's the big red-haired monster with the sneakers that runs around. Yeah. I Gossamer, say that, everybody gets it. You say Gossamer, they're like, who?
Yeah, who's right. Gossamer? And right. Then you say big red hairy monster with sneakers. They go, oh, that guy. I love that guy.
Yeah, so we're doing a one-shot crossover with Pierre Brito and Paul Mouncer on the art, and it's basically Harley. Coney Island has a hurricane hit it, and a Acme box washes up on the beach, and it goes from there. It's a lot of fun.
That's great. Honestly, these crossovers have been great fun. I really enjoyed them. I don't know if you guys have seen them too, but I really enjoyed how they're going.
Yeah, I did the Yosemite Sam Jonah Hex one. And I wrote the Jetsons mini. I wrote that Jetsons miniseries. I've done a couple. They are fun.
Very good. All right. Is that going to be your last Harley Quinn for a while, or are you going to have other things?
A little bit. We're talking about
not forever.
We're but talking for about while. Things like, you know, like getting our page rates up so we can come back and do more. So we'll see if they listen to that. I don't know. No, I'm kidding. But you know, we have another project we're working on, and then we'll see what time allows. We're never going to totally go away from Harley. We're just going to take a nice break.
We adore her.
Yeah.
And she's a really fun character to work on.
I always tell people her origin is that she was created simply to roll a cake in that was going to explode in Batman the Animated Series. And suddenly, look at her now. She's all over the place.
She had it 15 minutes, then she's a monster. So, you know.
Yeah.
This is great fun. Great fun. Now. Now, I see your name in Walmart these days.
It is. It's I have my own line of children's wear. I'm kidding. I'm working on. Well, both of us are working on. But I worked on the first two issues of the Superman collection, 100 Page Giant, and the Batman 100 Page Giant. And then the third Justice League 100 Page Giant starts Amanda, mine, Chad Harden, and Alex Sinclair's Wonder Woman on doing like a 12-parter. It's something. When I was younger, I bought the 100 Page Giants, and that's how I learned about all these other characters. So we're hoping with this is that it's going to be an easy grab for somebody who likes the superheroes in the movies but never tried the comics. And we're hoping that that gets people to read comics, and then they find the comic shops eventually.
Of course, now you're getting to do the big names again, so that's kind of fun for you guys. How about the art? Are you going to do something different this time in the Walmart?
I'm not actually doing much of anything art-wise in the Walmart stuff. I'm mostly co-writing it. But we are lucky enough to have Chad Harden with us again. And I loved his stuff on Harley. And he has actually what they call in the outside world a real job, which is it's like a teaching or a professor job at one of the universities. But when he gets summers off, we tackle him to come make him work for us. So we're lucky enough to have him on board again.
It's very San Diego here, so there's a lot going on.
All the noise.
There's hubbub in the background. That's what goes on, so that's fine.
Well, I am working on creator-owned stuff. I'm not working as fast as I'd like to, but I am working on it. And I'm still doing covers. You know, people ask me to do covers, and I'm working on covers for a Vertigo book called Second Coming. And
Supergirl?
Yeah, Supergirl. I'm doing Supergirl covers, and sure, I'm like forgetting something really important.
There's always a cover or two going on in the house.
Yes, so I always want to keep drawing, because that's really my favorite. I like writing okay, but I love drawing, so that's what.
That was what I was going to ask you. What's it like to write if you're more of an artist?
You can tell.
I said earlier today, I'm like, I hate writing, but
well,
I was.
It's funny. Somebody was coming to us to offer us a job, writing, and the guy goes to Amanda. He goes, "So you know, we're thinking, of, you know, we'll get you write stuff." She goes, "I hate writing." Like that was our interview. She just sat there and said, "I hate writing," and the guy just started laughing.
Well, you know what? What I like about writing is the faster it gets me to drawing. You know, because that's really what I enjoy doing the most. I mean, I don't really hate writing. I would just rather be drawing. So, and I really enjoy it. Although when I do write, and Jimmy can attest to this, I'm a bit of a control freak. I want it all done my way, and I want it to sound the way I want it to sound. So yeah, when I do write, I tend to.
She does become a horrible monster.
Yes, I am. Yeah. I'm a bit of a bully. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I drew some comics.
He's a really good artist, but he won't admit it.
I inked a lot of comics. I think I inked over 1,000 comics before I started writing. Yeah. And I drew a bunch in the beginning, and then I said, that's too much work. And then I started inking, and I said, well, that's a lot of books. And I said, let me try writing. So that writing's, God knows what's next, but it'll be something weird.
You do the whole game now.
I have edited, and I started coloring covers. So I did that job. I haven't lettered because my lettering's horrible. My handwriting's terrible.
It is, actually.
Yeah, it is. And thank you. And I like doodling. I like drawing. I like when a fan comes, I'll just do a quick drawing. Yeah. I never charge because I figure if I charge, they can complain. But if it's free, they really can't. They can't bitch that much.
And usually when he doodles on the phone, like he becomes like, he does like these little tiny things on little tiny pieces of paper. Very Robert Williams. Like I keep trying to encourage him to do more of that, but I think I would just have to keep him on the phone all day. No,
it's a headache. You know, drawing the inside of comics, that's for tough guys. I'm not that tough. They're not easy to do.
No. It takes time. So are you guys going to be doing the Walmart stuff, the co-writing for a while? Do you haven't planned out for a while?
We're lined up for 12. It's a 12-part story, so it's that, and then we'll see where it goes from there. We're hoping the program, you know, becomes big thing, you know. It's very experimental.
Yeah.
It's got some learning curves.
More readers. That's our main goal, yeah. Is to get, you know, more readers into the game.
With Harley Quinn, we actually noticed in the 4 or 5 years we're doing it, we actually got a lot of moms and daughters buying comics, right? And that's like, that's a big deal. And then we noticed our audience became like 80% women, and or female and women. And it was like, well, that's a great thing because, and now look at this convention, it's like, it's such an even mix. And it used to not be, you know, you remember, it used to be guys with their wives behind them holding their bag, rolling their eyes, saying, you owe me a nice dinner. And so it's changed. So we're hoping with everything we do, we can bring new people in to read comics. We need new people all the time.
Oh, yeah, we need new readers and new women to do things like that, to the create. Because there are many stories about women that have not been told, in my estimation. So I'm really anxious to see. You know, with Harley Quinn, you guys had a lot of fun.
It's all coming. You know, it's like there's so many more women doing comics now. And it's paying off because I remember back in the early 90s. I remember these.
How long have you been making comics?
Okay, this fall it will be 30 years. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. But I remember I co-owned a comic book store up north for a few years, and hardly any women were reading comics. You know, we'd have a few girls coming in and out of the comic book store, but these guys would come in and they would say, my wife and I just had a little girl, and I'm going to get her hooked on comics. And I'm like, thanks, dads, because they did their job. And all those little girls are like in their 20s now, and they're drawing comics and they're reading comics. So, you know, I think it's just a snowball that has gotten bigger, and it's just going to keep getting bigger.
I think Amanda inspired a lot of women too along the way.
I hope
because
so.
When she started, there was 5 women drawing comics, maybe, in the comic industry, and now it's, you know, now it's completely
not
different.
Not that many, yeah.
See, guys like that, because I used to work at a hospital where a lady, her sons were into football, and she realized if she was ever going to talk with them, she needed to learn football. And so she sat with them watching the games, figuring out, she would come to work, and all the guys would gather around her because she could talk football. And she was the most popular lady on the place because she could talk football.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same
thing. That's fine.
Yeah. And I always used to say back in the day, I'm like, you want girls to read comics because you want somebody to talk comics with, you know? And if you should fall in love and get married, you know, I would say this to, you know, whatever guys were thinking about dating a girl. I'm like, you want a girl that's interested in comics, so you have a shared interest, you know? So it's,
when I met Amanda, she said to me, you know what? I saw Star Wars 22 times in a theater. And in spite of that, I hung around. In spite of that madness, that little gem of madness she shoved into my face, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, but
it just makes you crazy.
I grew up with comics, so I love talking comics. I love talking movies. It was so much fun. I actually, when I was younger, I wanted to be Wonder Woman, and then I found out that that wasn't a real job. I was very disappointed. So I ended up, you know, making comic books. So that was, you know, that was a good exception to it. You know.
Any other projects you guys are working on, we should be aware of?
At DC, nothing.
I think
that's
we are,
it.
We're
those
just
two.
Forgetting it.
Outside of that, working on a Painkiller Jane film with Jessica Chastain, and there's other stuff there. I'm just forgetting.
Yeah, I think there's like a.
I think we have a. I have a. I did a book, Random Acts of Violence. That will be shot by Jay Baruchel. Did the screenplay from my book and mine and Justin Gray's book, and hopefully that's going to be shot this fall. I think they're shooting it in Toronto this fall. So it's not comic book stuff, but it's sort of comic book.
Do you get any input as far as?
With Painkiller Jane, I'm executive producer, and I story's based on my work, And then, you know, so we do stuff with, Amanda and I have a company, Paper Films, right, paperfilms.com. So we do a lot of stuff. We do little pins and t-shirts and, you know, fun stuff around our work. So we're always doing something. But the Wonder Woman is our big gig. You know, the Walmart in the JLA books is our big gig.
Yeah. That'll be fun to see. So this is your dream to be
Wonder Woman. She's Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I guess
she is Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Around the house, she is.
Well, it's great talking with you guys. As always, much success, and look forward to all these good things.
So good
it's
to
a pleasure.
Talk to you. It's good to see you again.
Thank you.
And enjoy the rest of the madness that is San Diego Comic-Con.
That's it for this episode. Be back next time when we'll have even more from San Diego Comic-Con. But until then, keep reading your comics.